Hey everyone, Chris Wan here. This is Accent Out Loud, a podcast about one person's take on English language learning, accent modification, and communication. This is going to be episode 27. I've actually done this a few times now. 27 is definitely a number that I didn't think I would necessarily get to, but just keep grinding and somehow I made it here. Now, this time around, I'm still going to talk about my weekly newsletter. What I want to get into the habit of doing is every newsletter, I'll talk about it in the podcast, and then I'll try to have something else on the side that I can continue, but at least this has that consistency for me, that I can talk about it, that it's something that I've already discussed, worked on a bit more, and I have some stable content that I'm bringing to the table. So this is going to be from yesterday's newsletter, November 6th. Today is November 7th. And the first thing is going to be Journal Club. Let me actually backtrack a bit. If you are just joining us for the first time, I try to review and write a podcast or have a podcast and talk about English pronunciation, English accent, and learning how to communicate more effectively in English. My newsletter is about splitting and finding five areas to talk about for the English language. So first, I talk about something called Journal Club, where I review a news article, a journal article, a scientific article, typically about English accents, communication, English language learning, that type of thing. Two, I talk about a thoughtful quote that I thought inspired me for that week, inspired me for that day, that made me think about accent modification and my perspective on flipping whatever that quote is to and making it more relevant to English accent learning. The third one is a vocabulary word. I pick a word that I think is important, that I think is relevant or interesting, and I talk about it. I talk about why I pronounce it this way. I talk about what it means, those types of things, and sort of how it resonates with me when I think about English accent learning. Four, a tech find. So usually I'll talk about something kind of techie, kind of computerish, kind of website-based, something along those lines, maybe an app, something that I think is new, is different, maybe important, maybe exciting, maybe something down the pipeline in the future that can be harnessed for English language learning or pronunciation. And number five is going to be a message mishap. So this one is something that I talk about, a situation that wires got crossed, communication fell apart, there was some sort of miscommunication or breakdown, and I try to talk about why it's important to think about what the implications can be for that and what we need to do in the future. So first one up, Journal Club. Okay, this one's going to be from a recent article, 2017, by Alavinia and Golizada. I'm really bad for butchering names. I'm so sorry. If anyone knows how to pronounce those properly, Alavinia, as well as Gholizadeh, hit me up, let me know. You can find me on Instagram, leave a note on the podcast, something. But it's called, Does Learner Motivation Impact Pronunciation Gains in the Light of Teacher or Peer Oral Corrective Feedback? So that mouthful of a title basically means that we're taking a look at whether or not learner motivation, whether or not the degree of motivation that a person has to learn and gain English skills impacts their actual pronunciation gains, and does it actually make a difference if the feedback that they're getting is from a teacher or a peer? So they did this study with 14 and 15 year olds, had them in a program for English language learning. I think it was like twice a week that they would go to this extracurricular class. And you'd either have a person who, or they're gauging their motivation for learning English. Some people are motivated by just intrinsically, they are motivated by the concept of learning, they enjoy learning, they enjoy English, they want to learn that way, or extrinsic motivation factors. So they're geared towards doing well for a presentation, doing well for some sort of English studies class, some sort of reward based that is not on your intrinsic happiness. People come with motivations all the time for whatever thing they pursue, right? For me, something that I was interested in before was soccer, right? An extrinsic motivation is I want to win gold, I want a trophy, I want money, I want to make this a profession. An intrinsic factor is I just enjoy the sport. I love the sport. I love everything about it. I enjoy learning about soccer. I enjoy developing and honing my skills. That's more intrinsic. So it's a matter of what drives you to learn something. And I think that's a huge question. The other part is, does it make a difference if a teacher gives you feedback or a peer gives you feedback? It can be different and feel different if your teacher is trying to give you corrective feedback. In school, your teachers are always giving you feedback, that type of thing. But it feels different from when a friend tells you, or a colleague tells you, or a fellow classmate tells you, oh, by the way, you say it this way. Does that make a difference? Does that make a difference? So it's an interesting question as like an overall research project to try and dissect that a bit more. What they did was they had these 14 and 15 year olds, and they gave them the questionnaire to figure out their level of motivation and things like that. And then they're focusing on whether or not feedback is peer driven or instructor driven. What was interesting to me is the results, and I'm not going to talk about the details of the results. I'm not going to talk about what methods, what procedures, what scientific analyses. I think it's important work, but not for the point of this podcast. I think I want to talk about some more general applicable things. And getting bogged down in the research, the scientific method, the constructive criticisms, the areas for further research, all of that is not what I want to get stuck on. But this study, the finding was that it didn't make a difference. There wasn't a huge, significant difference in terms of what motivation people had. And there wasn't a significant, statistically significant difference in whether the feedback was peer-driven or instructor-driven. Now that boggles my mind to some degree. I think it's important, at least I thought it was important, that somebody was more motivated intrinsically, that they had this intrinsic motivation to continue the drive to be practicing and things like that. But this research study suggests that 14 and 15 year olds, it doesn't really matter. Now there are definite other factors involved. I mean, when you're 14, 15, you're still, I think, within that sensitive, critical period of time where people are acquiring language. You're not a full adult yet. You're not as inflexible with your speech, motor speech patterns and things like that. But it was definitely interesting. And what they're finding is that both are helpful. Both student peer-driven feedback and teacher-driven feedback, they're both helpful. They're both going to help you more in achieving and gaining skills. But I think it's also important for me to know that, like, whether or not a person comes across to me as more intrinsically motivated, they are seeking out my services themselves, they want to do the work themselves, versus a extrinsically motivated person where maybe they're looking for a promotion, whether they have a big business presentation or pitch or meeting coming up, it doesn't make a difference. So, I think for me, And the way that I'm thinking of this as an educator, as a speech language pathologist, is that those things shouldn't necessarily dictate who I think is going to do the work, work hard, be persistent, those types of things. And neither should you, right? If you want to be honest with yourself and you say, yeah, I want to be considered for that higher wage position that requires me to speak more in English, or that, yeah, I want to make more money. Those are perfectly reasonable, honest desires and motivations, and you can 100% succeed with them. I think the next thing that I need to take a look at is how much work you need to put in. What they're finding in the research is, yes, people who have an ear for accents or have an ear for those types of differences or nuances in speech, they probably have an advantage. But it'd be interesting to know how much hard work people put into the craft in developing it is going to make a difference. So that was my two cents for the research side of things. On to the quote. So the quote comes from A.A. Milne, and it's actually a Winnie the Pooh reference. So you know it's going to be exquisite. The quote goes, "Rivers know this. There is no hurry. We shall get there someday." And I think, to me, it really, really drives home the point about patience and how crucial patience is in the overall grand scheme of things. Patience is one of those things that everyone knows you need to have it. Everyone knows you need to use it. Everyone knows what patience is. But it's such a hard thing to truly walk a mile in with. Like, it's such a hard thing to really grasp intentionally. Because people can say that they're patient, right? But if I say, if I told clients, you can gain or you can acquire what you want out of practice with me, you can gain the skills to be a good, effective communicator. You can gain the skills to get your TH sound, your R sound, your S sound, your F sound, whatever sound you feel like you need to work on. You can do that. But it's going to take hard work, consistent work, and it's going to take 5 years. But I guarantee you're going to do it. I don't know whether or not people have the patience for that. Now, obviously, I can't guarantee that, because there needs to be a sense of client ownership over this goal, right? It'll depend on them. I personally don't feel comfortable making these kinds of guarantees. I will tell you everything I can do. I'll show you all the things I know about certain sounds, about the pitch, about the intonation, about the rhythm of English. I'll tell you all of it. But it really is a goal that you need to keep yourself accountable for. But back to the point, I think patience is one of those things that even for me, I struggle with so much, right? I'm impatient. I'm 30 years old. I know that I have more potential to do good and work in the world, and I need to be patient to go through the motions, to go through the struggles, to go through the hard times to actually develop it. But I'm so impatient because I feel like I can do so much for people and I have the energy and time to do it. But it's something that day by day, hour by hour, I have to just go through the motions over and over and over again. I get 4 listens maybe on this podcast each episode. Not a lot, but I have to go through this time frame of having 4, 3, 1, 7, 5 people listening to get to more, to get to 20, to get to 30, to get to 40. And I just have to keep telling myself to be patient, to wait, to hone my craft, to hone my message when delivering through a podcast, all these things. So I'm taking this patience piece for myself. If you feel like it is helpful for you, take it too. On to vocabulary. Now, the word today that I'm going to talk about is the word relevant. Relevant. And it's an adjective that we use that is used to define closely connected or appropriate to what is being or done or considered. And so I use the word relevant a lot. If you're talking about social media, you have to talk about being relevant. If you are questioning whether or not somebody's topic is associated with the previous topic, or if they're just completely changing topics, you can ask, is that relevant? If I talk to a friend about hockey and partway through they say, I'm hungry, I can ask them, is that relevant to the topic? So relevant is a word that I like to use a lot. And I think for me, the biggest struggle in working in trying to do accent modification is that it's very different from my typical 9-to-5. I work in a hospital, patients are sick, they're stuck in a hospital. They don't necessarily have too much choice in terms of who comes to help them, who comes to see them. At least in Canada, where I'm in, it's public healthcare. There's the hospital hires and funds for X number of speech language pathologists. One of those speech language pathologists will come to you and work with you. But in accent modification, it's a private sector job. So I have to work on delivering, pitching myself, demonstrating or selling myself, marketing myself. And these are all weird sort of concepts for me as a public health worker. So the thing that I've struggled with a lot is, how do I stay relevant? How do I be relevant in a private sector? How do I market myself? How do I demonstrate my competence? How do I communicate my role to them on a daily basis and pitch this vision that improvements in English pronunciation can bring for them, while still being true, while still being honest, while still being authentic, while still being vulnerable, that I'm learning on the way? So that's how I interpret being relevant. That's how I thought about the word relevant in this case. So what is relevant to you? What is important to you? What makes you happy, excited, pumped today? Is English pronunciation one of them? Do you want this? I mean, if you're listening to this, then you must have had must have shown some sort of interest. But is it relevant? What are you doing in your daily life to make it relevant on a day-to-day basis, to practice? Just my 2 cents. Next one, tech finds. Okay. So this one, it wasn't necessarily a tech find today, but I found a awesome depiction of how non-native English speakers may perceive English. Now, I left a link on the newsletter that actually shows the YouTube video that I found. And it's quite brilliant, because the way that I see it, I almost think of it like Charlie Brown, when Charlie Brown and Snoopy are in class, or maybe Charlie Brown's in class, he's talking to the teacher, and the teacher goes, wah, 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 wah. And then Charlie Brown has this sort of conversation with this teacher where you don't even understand what the teacher says, but it sounds kind of English. It sounds kind of familiar. And the reason for that is they sort of strip away the actual sounds and the clarity of the sounds, but, or the recognizability of the sounds, but they maintain the English rhythm. They maintain the pitch changes that are naturally happening in English, and it still retains that English sense. And so this video likewise identifies and puts maybe one or two English words every so often, but the majority of the video has these two actors speaking gibberish, but with English rhythm and intonation patterns. And I think the goal for them was to just show what it might feel like for a non-native English speaker, for somebody learning English. Yeah, you might pick up one or two words. You won't get the whole thing, and the rest sounds like gibberish. But the way that I heard it was, this is an amazing, amazing example of separating intonation patterns and rhythms to content. Some people, some non-native English speakers, they have the content, right? They can use the right words, but if the words are not put to English rhythms, they're not put to English intonation changes, then the communication can still fall apart. And that's what happens sometimes when you hear computer-generated English speech, like in Siri, Google Home, anything that has a computer-generated voice. It can sound quite monotone the entire time because there's not a very clear understanding of pitch and rhythm changes in English, right? So if I don't put in that up and down sing-song sort of melody to my English speech, yes, the content is there. Yes, the words are correct, but the delivery is not there. The captivation of English is not there. The overall communicative effort doesn't fully get communicated. So I thought that that was a wonderful example, even if they weren't necessarily trying for that, but a wonderful example of isolating rhythm and intonation versus content. The actual sounds you make versus the up and down sing-songy rhythm of English. Next one. Okay, last one. We got message mishap. So sometimes there are words out there that will sound the same, but are spelled different. We call them homophones. H-O-M-O-P-H-O-N-E-S. Homophones. So they have the same pronunciation, but maybe different meanings, origins, or spelling. Right? So an example would be the pronounced word to. It could be T-O, it could be T-O-O, it could be T-W-O, to. Homophone. Same thing with the word compliment. C-O-M-P-L-I-M-E-N-T or C-O-M-P-L-E-M-E-N-T. So I version, it can be an expression of praise, admiration, right? You're cute. Compliment. You're so smart. Compliment. All with the I. Now the E version, C-O-M-P-L-E-M-E-N-T, is something that completes or makes perfect. So if I said, yo, this, I don't know, peanut butter sandwich would be complemented so perfectly with some jelly, peanut butter and jelly, then that's what I mean. It makes complete. This coffee would be complemented so well with a donut. Donut and coffee. So good. Compliment. C-O-M-P-L-E-M-E-N-T. So just remembering and making even up rules for yourself to remember is one way that you can gain the control and the knowledge over these differences. As you learn new words or new spellings, make little rules for yourself to remember and recall the proper spelling and meanings. So for the word complement, if you remember, if something complements something, it completes it. Complete and that definition of complement both have an E in it. So that could be one way that you remember it. Once you have these little rules for yourself, the more you use these words, the more easily you can recall them correctly and quickly. Anyways, that was it for this one. Have a good one. If you like what you're hearing, or even if you aren't, let me know. I know that this podcast can actually be something great, educational, and inspiring for a lot of people. I'm here to listen. So give me your takes, your likes, your dislikes, and maybe we can make this into something that'll actually help a lot of people. Leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Once I figure out how to read the reviews, I'm sure it'll help. Peace.